Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, October 20th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. And you can access those tools on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words, start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your App Store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a powerful set of tutorials for you to get the most benefit out of these tools in the most efficient period of time. And we hope people do all of those things soon and often because our experience has been that the more people use these tools in their lives, the more satisfaction they get out of life, the more they spend time in loving exchange with people and relationships, the more they spend more time in the positive emotional states rather than the negative emotional states that we generate when we focus our mind energy on something that is off the mark. And the other reason we like people to do that is because it frequently leads to comments and questions, answers and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, feel free to give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And when people do that, it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. Our intention with this work is to be of service. So let us know. How can we be of service to you? As Susan did yesterday, and most of the call yesterday was having discussion about how to apply these things that we're reading in the way of mastery and learning from the use of these tools to actual situations in our lives. A little bit of a delay in getting that file uploaded to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website because of some technical difficulties, but most of the shows from January 10th until now have been edited out so that the first hour is available because it's relating specifically to the Way of Mastery, which we've been reading and studying since then. And those files are available on the website MindShiftersAcademy.org, and there's a page for The Way of Mastery on MindShifters Radio with commentary. And I've lost count of how many, but there's clearly over 150 hours of audio there because it's 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, with the exception of those times where we had a replay. And as I say that, it reminds me that I need to upload some more files of the actual literal reading without commentary of the Way of Mastery lessons. So I guess I have some extra work to do this weekend in that regard. And where we left off the last time we were talking about this, probably on Tuesday, where I was reading from Lesson 24, doing a review of that lesson. And where I left off was where it was reading, the text is reading, the way of transformation then comes to a conclusion as you sit quietly within yourself and you look upon the past 12 lessons. You look upon the insights, the changes, the chance encounters, and you accept and know that the being who you were, your mind, your perceptions, as you began these 12 lessons, no longer exists in the same form, except as an echo of an ancient memory. And you no longer need to invest the power of your identity with what has passed away. This is just a restatement of what we talk about and experience on a regular basis. If I go back and reread the book, The Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, it is not going to be the same person who reads that book. I might have a sense that, boy, this book's changed, or, oh, I don't remember reading that the first time. But in essence, the thing that has changed is the person, the entity, the consciousness, the identity that is perceiving that book. And what this work is saying is, please feel free to move forward with who you are becoming rather than clinging to the echoes of an ancient memory, an identity that you had formed about yourself, the set of thoughts and images about who you are, who you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to treat the world, and how the world is supposed to treat you. All of that is fluid. It is not your essence. Feel free to release it and live more in the moment. The text goes on and says, the way of certain knowledge begins with this. Rest assured that the time you spend in contemplation before you begin the next part of this course, which will be known as the way of knowing, the time you spend in contemplation is your final transition, if you will but accept it. That is the time in which you can turn away from the past and look back upon it no longer. This is the time in which you can step into the light of the future of your own personal destiny, held in the hands of a perfectly loving creator that already has a plan for you. If not, you would not have been birthed. For you are certainly not an accident. This time, before you begin the way of knowing, is most crucial for you. For it is now up to you alone to decide to acknowledge the truth. That is, to decide what you are committed unto. That is, for you to decide to be committed to the voice for the Holy Spirit, not the voice for fear. The text asks us, are you committed to using the things of time and space to reaffirm the old beliefs that you're separate from your Creator? Or will you use the things of time and allow the Holy Spirit to use them for you to demonstrate for you that you are in the world but no longer of the world? You're no longer possessed and owned by the world. You are now owned by that voice for love that has birthed you and sent you forth to bring forth the word. And the word here is not a written word. It's not a combination of letters. It's not even the meaning that gets resonated within the mind of a person who hears the vibrations that we call words. What they're talking about here when they use the word word is the energy of creation expressing in form, the movement of the mind energy, which is creative. And the text goes on and says, the word is just that vibration in which peace, forgiveness, and knowing abide. The word is like a vibration, a wave that emanates from the depth of the ocean that speaks of the good, the holy, and the beautiful. It looks upon the things of space and time, even upon the body, and it sees nothing to be feared, but sees all things in their perfect, harmless innocence, and that innocence owns and embraces the totality of your perfect freedom. You are pure spirit. You are as the wind. You can neither possess nor be possessed, for you are owned of the Creator. Love embraces you. Love pervades you. And you hear no other voice but the voice for love. Through your eyes will shine a light so clear, for indeed the eyes are the window of the soul. Through your eyes will shine a light so clear that through you can begin to emanate the truth that is true always. And you will not fear looking into the eyes of a brother or a sister and saying unto them, quote, I am that one sent forth of the Father. And if I am with you in this moment, my only purpose is to be present as love with you, for you, for us, and for all of creation. This is the choice I make. This is the beingness I bring. This is the truth that I am devoted to. I bring you only love. Indeed, beloved friends, the way of the heart was designed to open you to the reality that within you lies a center of peace, a center of forgiveness, a center that can begin to take you toward certain knowing. The way of transformation was designed quite specifically for those of you that truly enjoined it. It was designed to dissolve certain patterns in the mind, to reactivate your power to deliberately decide what you will think, what you will feel, what you will create, what you will believe, and what frequencies of thought will be acceptable unto you. Now we come to the brink of a decision that closes the door. It closes the door on a past once made in error that has been corrected through the grace, through the gift of the Holy Spirit, and placed within your mind and heart. and the opening of a door of a life lived, not seeing the kingdom, but a life lived in the kingdom, in the light of the kingdom of perfect truth. And it might look like this. It might sound like this. Quote, I and my Father are one. Nothing can arise by accident. My only purpose is to embrace creation, that the good, the holy, and the beautiful might be extended through even this body mind, wherever it happens to be, whatever time of day, whatever interaction, whatever moment, for my delight is the love of my Creator. My devotion is to the extension of love, capital L love, my peace from the embrace of my brothers and sisters in the simplicity of a celebration that shall know no end. Close quotes. I'm perfectly aware that many of you, as you read these words, who will feel yet a subtle contraction, because fear attempts one final time to claim ownership of your being, and yet you are free to choose otherwise. You are free to say, for instance, quote, no, I'm not going to buy into fear. It is the truth that I accept. It is truth that I will know. It is truth that I will live, not for another, but for myself. For only my responsibility, and my only responsibility from the moment of my creation, was to accept the atonement for myself, to allow the transformation to occur in the depth of my mind, so that ancient words become in truth mine, my possession, my knowing, my life experience. Quote, I and my Father are one, and I know it. Henceforth, I'm free to walk this earth in gentleness, not to strive to move into the future, but to be born on the wings of love, the wings of love that will carry me into the fulfillment of my destiny. And my destiny can only be that which reflects the creation in this world. Close quotes. The text goes on and reminds us to not let fear claim authority over the mind any longer. This does not mean that you will not occasionally feel it like a wave through you. The difference is that you need not value it. Guy Finley has several talks about this. He's talking about living the fearless life and fearlessness, et cetera, over and over and over again. He's getting rid of fear, and he talks about how the fearless life is not a life that has no fear in it. And it's essentially the same message that this book is giving us here. We will have energy of fear that we are aware of. We will at times see it in others. We will in times see it or feel it within ourselves. And yet, we have been given the power of choice. We've been given free will. And as this book says, and in the Darshans it says, free will cannot be usurped. So it's going to happen. I'm going to have awareness of fear. I'm going to have the experience of that fearful energy moving through my mind. The key thing is, what do I do with it? Do I react to it the way I've been trained? There I was, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, and I watched my parents have this energy of fear in their systems. I watch them either cower or rage. I watch them attack other people or beat themselves up mercilessly. I downloaded impressions about how should I respond when this energy is around. And that has been deeply embedded into my life experience, my thoughts about myself. A book like this is trying to wake me up to understand that doesn't have to be. That doesn't have to continue in me as a pattern of responding. So this book says, choose to share only your loving thoughts. This book calls us to words like, which thoughts will you value? And again, these are just words. What's the meaning for that? What am I going to give this a priority in my life? Am I going to believe it's true? Am I going to argue for it? So it uses words like value, own, identify with, share, honor, bless. All of these words are just pointing towards an energetic relationship that you create, whether you're aware that you're creating it or not. You can choose to create once you become aware of it. What's the energetic relationship you are going to have with an energy called fear? What's the energetic relationship you're going to choose to create with a thought of, I'm separate from life, I'm separate from my brother and sister, I'm separate from my creator? What's the energetic relationship you're going to create or choose to value with a set of thoughts that say, I'm better than somebody, or I'm not as good as somebody, or I deserve to be punished, or that person should be punished? This work is trying to help us step into an entirely different way of living and being, a different way of using time, a different way of viewing time, a different way of understanding how it is that we create our experience of life in each new present moment. The last little paragraph read, let not fear claim authority over your mind any longer. This does not mean that you will not occasionally feel it like a wave moving through you. However, the difference is you need not value that. You need not believe it as being valid. You need not let it help you decide what to do next, because fear is false. Fear is the opposite of love. Fear comes from judgment and separation and denial. So fear comes from the original dream of separation. Fear is only possible as a thought process. We're not talking about the fight or flight response that can kick in without any thought to save us from somebody, you know, swinging a bat near us intentionally or unintentionally. We're not talking about the reflexes of the physical body that are programmed to keep the body safe and in the mode of survival. We're talking about emotions and thoughts. And as those emotions and thoughts move through your mind, it's important to be able to question, what's your relationship to that? What's your belief about that? What is the value you place upon that thought or that emotion? And this work is calling us to that from the very first lesson, where it says, right on page 5 in the very beginning of this book, please let this thought into your mind. It's the first step in awakening. And the thought is, quote, nothing that you experience is created by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. So if you experience an energy of fear moving through your mind and your body's energy system like a wave, you have, knowingly or unknowingly, created it. You have, at one level or another of your being, chosen to value the thoughts, to value the impressions, to value the energies that are giving rise to that experience in that moment. The next section is titled The Final Stage, and the text reads, "The final stage, the way of certain knowing, is to claim your right to be perfectly happy." And this has me stop, right? And I flash back right now to the many times in my life journey, my spiritual journey, my teachings with this work, my studying as a student with this work, how many times I have been present when human beings are arguing about whether or not it's possible to be happy all the time. Whether or not you have to have the negative emotions with the positive. Whether or not we're intended to be happy. And if I am intended to be happy, then why is this happening? And why is that happening? And why do some people get grace and I don't? And what are you telling me? That if I don't feel like I have grace in my life, that I've failed and I'm a screw-up? It goes on and on and on. It was even one of the main topics from our Tuesday support group, where people have such a strong core belief that they are bad or wrong, that they are failing, that they aren't living up to someone's expectations or their own ideals, and that that's a bad thing. So here it is in The Way of Mastery, Lesson 24. It says, "The final stage, the way of certain knowing, is for you to claim your right to be perfectly happy." Well, what if my mindset says, I can't be happy unless I have this much money in the bank and this kind of a relationship and this kind of level of health for myself and my key family members, and so help me make that happen. So I'm talking to the universe, I'm talking to God, I'm talking to light, I'm talking to the people that have these manifesting courses that I buy. Help me make that happen. This work is not talking about making those things happen externally. This work is about choosing inside my mind-body energy system to align with the flow of creation and choose joy, choose light, choose love, choose to value only those thoughts that are in alignment with the flow of life as it unfolds. And that's how I get happy. The text goes on and says, "And perfect happiness can only come from the soul's decision to acknowledge the decision to value the truth and to live in it." Living the truth means I'm not going to fight with the flow of life. I wake up in the morning and the power's out. I'm not going to start groaning and moaning and being upset. I just recognize, here's a situation. It's 5 in the morning, there's no electricity, it's dark. I'm not going to follow the thoughts in my mind, which will go with that darn power company, or this is the worst day possible for this to happen, I've got an important meeting. I'm not going to follow that. I'll see those thoughts, they'll come up, and I'll breathe and soften and let them go. I'll recognize, all right, here I am, and I'm in a dark room. What's my next step to stay safe and calm and loving in my thoughts, in my actions, in my words? It's the acknowledgement, the allowance, acceptance, and surrender to the flow of life in each moment. As it talks about in Lesson 5 in this book, these are the keys to the kingdom. Slowing down and tuning inside myself to what is this energy of creation as it wants to express uniquely through me in this moment. And then understanding that focus on this internal guidance is a really good thing to have top of mind all day long. So I'm going to keep my intention focused on that. Then I'm going to learn to allow, which means to be willing to scan for the earliest signs of resistance and upset and tension and see them as false and release them and choose love. Choose to return to the direct observation about life as it's unfolding and do the next right thing to be a blessing for myself and others in that moment. And then surrender to be taught by the moment, especially when the moment, the life flow, is going in a direction other than what my conscious logical mind or my egoic self thinks it should be doing. Right? My mind wakes up and says, oh, it should be light in here because I've got this timer that's supposed to go off when the alarm sounds. And now there's no light and there's no electricity and my alarm didn't go off and my clock is blank and I can't see the... Rather than have any resistance to those facts, those actualities, I use them in direct observation. I slow myself down. I calm myself down. I watch the negative thoughts flowing through my mind, and I choose to value and share with myself and others only the loving thoughts. Okay, this is the situation. It's dark in here. My bladder's full. I need to be careful as I try to move out of the bed into the bathroom. Maybe I need to find a flashlight first. Maybe I'm so familiar with the apartment or house that I know how to do that without a flashlight. I stay calm. I use direct observation. I understand this is the flow of life. I don't need to be in judgment of it. I don't need to value the thoughts that would have me cursing at the power company and all of the profits they've made and the rates go up and the service gets worse. And this final stage, the way of certain knowing, is to claim your right to be happy, perfectly happy. And perfect happiness can only come from your decision to acknowledge the decision to value the truth and to live it. What's the truth? It is how life is unfolding in this moment. Not how I think life should be unfolding, not how my religion taught me life should be unfolding, but how it's unfolding in this moment. The text goes on and says, nothing else can bring the soul to the completion of its peace. No other decision, no other thinking process brings the offspring to their creator. Brings the mother to the daughter, the father to the son to the father, brings the created to the creator, brings the sunbeam to the sun. No other thought process brings the wave to the ocean. And doing so in perfect remembrance that only the truth of life as it's unfolding, or capital L love, is real. And what is real cannot be threatened. The text goes on and says, the world no longer holds the illusory power that you once gave it. It becomes no longer something you must conform yourself to in order to survive. For you are, as a spark of light, as this spiritual being, unlimited spirit, you are life eternal, and your life is held in the abundance of the Creator's love. You stand then on the brink of a complete transformation of the perception of the world. It will be radically changed instantly in the twinkling of an eye as you look upon it and say, quote, there is nothing here that has a greater power than the love of creation. Because I abide in that love, I'm freed from needing anything of the world. I am free only to give to the world. And what I give is added unto me, for by teaching I learn, and by giving I receive. My love of creation is matched only by my love for my capital S self, as that which the Creator has created, perfect and whole and innocent. My love for myself is so deep and so purified in the falseness of the falseness of guilt and smallness and egoism that I want all of creation. And I will bring forth only that which allows me to feel and to know my oneness with that frequency of light and creation. close quotes. The text goes on and says, I once said that if you are not wholly joyous, it could only be because you have elected to use the power of your mind to think differently than your creator. This is exactly the message that Abraham Hicks gives in a number of different talks. If you look out and you generate anger when you look at one of your brothers and sisters, the only reason you could have that discomfort of that energy of judgment and anger is because you're choosing a view of that person or that life situation that is other than the way source energy looks at that person or that life situation. The text I just read said, I once said that if you are not wholly, completely joyous, it could only be because you've elected to use the power of your mind to think differently than your creator. It goes on and says, the way of knowing will bring you into the certainty of a perfect joy that is unshakable. Imagine then no more swings of depression, no more swings of self-doubt, just pure beingness of love, right where the ego used to claim property rights. The life that you were created to live is in the palm of your hand. The decision to end the way of transformation by simply acknowledging that with this quote, only the truth can be true, and I am fully committed to being only that, close quotes. That quote, that living into that statement brings you into the kingdom. The text goes on and says, no longer a journey to it, but now the eternal journey within it. Mystery upon mystery, miracle upon miracle, sublime beauty upon sublime beauty, peace growing into peace as you surrender and sink into the reality of the Creator's presence forevermore, forevermore, and forevermore. For the Creator is without end and knows neither height nor depth. There is no limit to the reality, capital R reality, the actuality of the Creator. There can be no greater joy than to allow your consciousness, which is the gift of your awareness, to be ever permeated deeper and deeper and deeper by the certainty of a perfect knowing. Here's one way to state that perfect knowing. Quote, I am that one. I abide in that love prior to every breath, every thought, and every gesture. This body is not what I am, but I will use it as a communication device. I will not use it to separate myself from my brother and sister. I will use it to gesture in the ways of love, the ways of respect, the ways of gentleness, the ways of embrace, the ways of appreciation, and the ways of thankfulness. I will see my father in my brother and sister. I will love that and honor them as the vehicle, the conduit that brings the light of Creator to my physical eyes. I will revel in the delight of how the sunlight sparkles on the dew upon a petal of a flower. I will listen to the barking of a dog and know that mystery has been made manifest. I will walk this earth as one who is free, and one who is the spaciousness through which only love abides and is offered, close quotes. And many will be sent to you who will awaken in your presence in even what you call ordinary moments. You stand at the brink of all that the soul has desired. Is it not time to wrap the fingers of the hand around what has been placed in the palm? Own this statement. You are that one. time to live in the kingdom, guided only by the voice for love, by the voice for truth, by the purity of spirit. The last segment in this lesson, the last segment of the Way of Transformation is titled, Spend Time Alone to Reclaim and Value Only the Truth. The text reads, So I would ask you now to set aside yet a little time in which you abide wholly, totally, completely with yourself. Acknowledge the truth that is true always. I invite you to use the power of the clarity of your mind to decide against valuing illusions. Use that power to value only the truth, capital T truth, that you might offer yourself into a life through which the truth that is true always becomes concretely embedded in the totality of your being. For you indeed will know the truth, and you will know that it has set you free. Spend some time by yourself, quietly, alone. A long time ago, I once said unto you that the decision was made alone in the depth of your being to see if you could create something unlike the Creator. If you could transform yourself into something which is other than what the Creator has created. That has been the whole drama and dream of the realm of separation. You must come back to claiming ownership. You alone, in which you decide to use the power of the mind to make a different decision in the depth of your own being. For you stand alone before your Creator who waits patiently for his children, her children, its children to awaken and to receive the gifts that the Creator would bestow upon them. That the sun would shine forth upon the sunbeam, that the ocean would give unto the wave. The gifts that await your awakening are all power under heaven and earth to bring forth the good, the holy, and the beautiful, to walk in time as one who is timeless, to abide as a body-mind and yet know that they are pure spirit, shining forth temporarily through you now. To let you have acted. You have used the power of the mind to attempt the great impossibility of making yourself into something that is other than what the Creator created. Now it is time to deliberately use the power of the mind to decide with your Creator. It is the end of all seeking. It is the end of all striving. It far transcends the purest and greatest strategies and methodologies. It is beyond prayer. It is beyond meditation. It is the simplicity of the capital T truth. Therefore, abide quietly. Those of you that will indeed make the decision and will step across the edge, across the veil, into the kingdom. We will abide together for the next 11 lessons in the way of knowing, the way of perfect knowing, and you will see the totality of your life radically transformed. For that must be the case when the seeker is no more, and it has been replaced by one who has found and acknowledges it. Miracles will lead the way, for the mind that is given to true devotion to the Holy Spirit is unlimited forever in all ways, and the whole of creation shapes itself to be of service to the one that is anointed and claims it and lives only to give the creation to the world. Not one concern will arise before you that will not be taken care of and met before you run into it. The walls will dissolve. You will be miracle-minded. You will be the one who shines forth in perfect effortlessness, in perfect peace, in perfect joy. You will be Christ incarnate. And that is the purpose for which you were birthed in the mind of the Creator. It is in that mind that you are held now and forevermore. Be you therefore at peace this day and always. Be you therefore in the perfect knowledge that I am your brother and friend, and nothing but this. I am that one who loves you and sees only the light of capital T truth in you, and looks forward to the day in which we create together as equals in honor and devotion to the great mystery that the love of creation is. Peace, then, be unto you always. Amen. That is our second time through lessons 23 and lesson 24. That wraps up the way of transformation. And again, the invitation is there to go back over and over again before moving forward. We have 10 or so minutes left for comments or questions before we start the second hour. Feel free to call us at 563-999-3581 and let us know how this has landed with you, whether or not you feel like you're ready to move on into the way of knowing, or you feel like you personally need to go back and review. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? The second hour today is going to be at least the first half an hour of it is going to be a recording of the Why book, the sixth hour. It says the sixth hour partial, and it's only about 34 minutes long, and then perhaps Dr. Michael Rice will chime in, call in live for the second portion. Area code 541, you're in the air. Is this Celinda?
Yes, it is. You asked for comments. I'm comfortable with whatever happens in relation to whether we move forward or review one more time. And so I'm good with all of that. And I also wanted to share with you, in case you hadn't come across it, because you have spoken several times about Ho'oponopono, that my very favorite book comes from a gentleman named Ulrich E. Dupre, D as in Delbert, U, P as in Peter, R-E-E. And it's just simply titled Ho'oponopono, and the subtitle is The Hawaiian Forgiveness Ritual as the Key to Your Life's Fulfillment. I believe this gentleman is obviously French in origin, and I have a feeling he lives in Tahiti. but it's a very tiny book. And it has beautiful pictures of Tahiti and Hawaii in it. And he explained Ho'oponopono closer to the Aramaic gospel approach than any other Ho'oponopono book that I have read. And I thought I would encourage you to look it up. I think I got it at through Abe Books online as a used book for $10, and it was totally virginal. There wasn't a mark in it, and with free shipping. So I just wanted to encourage you.
So his last name is D-U-P-R-E-E?
Right, and there's an accent on the first E. And his first name is Ulrich.
What's the... Say that again. First name is what?
Ulrich, or Ulrich, I don't know how to say it. U-L-R-I-C-H. C is in Charlie. And his middle initial is E. And it's just titled
and the book is Ho'oponopono?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you'll find it, I'm sure, under that.
I'll look into it. Thank you.
That'd be great. I'd love your feedback because it really resonated for me very simply, very much like the way of mastery and simple like that. Really is, I found that, you know, regardless of how deep the message is in the way of mastery, I'm really enjoying the way it is languaged.
The way it's languaged in that book?
Mm-hmm. In the way of mastery.
Oh, all right. Okay. Very good. I will look into that book. Thank you for the recommendation.
You're so welcome.
Any other thoughts for you today?
No, I'm just enjoying participating in all I can. Very busy time here. We're in the country. And so we're off foraging walnuts and apples and plums and pears. And it's a very busy time as we prepare for the winter here. I feel like a squirrel.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder whether we learned it from them or they learned it from us. But it is the flow of nature to get ready for the winter, to lay up your stores. Good thing to do.
That's for sure. Yep, the thing to do. And be outside. More and more I'm valuing being in nature. And I have very tender feet, so I'm beginning to hay all of my pathways so that maybe I can not be in the mud or the dirt, but on the hay, and I can go barefoot in my garden. I would love that.
All right, well, enjoy your time outdoors. I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. Blessings. Thank you for the call.
Yes.
And I will get us started with our second hour since no one has any other comments. This is the sixth hour of the reading of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And I will be back again tomorrow. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. This is your second hour.
I am willing to live peacefully and be happy and go through the symptoms of the healing. I recall what you said earlier about the symptoms of healing, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to heal. It seems bizarre. I used to search for trouble purposely. I consciously, or maybe unconsciously, went looking for it and behaved in a way that guaranteed that I got it. When I think about the realities I've accepted in my mind, the realities that were the source of my words and behaviors and language, the ones that I used to describe women, the body, the intimate interrelationship, and even myself, it is amazing. I held a relationship together for even a week. I had no verbal respect for anything, and I blamed everyone else for being hostile when I had goaded them into it. Word patterns and realities are structured in our minds at an early age, Richard. Becoming conscious of, taking charge, and changing those patterns takes intelligence and commitment. A decent, intimate relationship is impossible if the words we use to describe ourselves, the body, the opposite sex, and or our relationships result in degrading feelings. And remember, feelings accompany the thoughts we think. In the Aramaic scriptures, it was said that he who could rule his tongue was mightier than he who could take a city. Richard admitted his language had been pretty raunchy for most of his life. He could see that his thoughts caused his feelings and decided he was ready to feel better about life, his body, and those with whom he had relationships. He liked the idea of maintaining the condition of love in his mind as he did the exercise and restoring the space of love. He made a commitment to continue that exercise as a daily practice.
I do feel lighter than I have felt in a long time, and I'm relieved. When I think about what's happening in my life, it seems that I can handle it.
Richard had a slight glow, and it was great to be a part of, receive from, and watch his transformation. So often we turn the way we feel over to an outside source. It would be good to rid yourself of that habit. There are lots of people who want to run your mind, the media, the advertisers, the movies, governments, religious leaders, just about everyone. It's time to take our power back. I recall the words of George Washington Carver, the man who spawned the peanut industry. He suffered much abuse, yet retained awareness of who he was in charge of his own mind. His comment on self-control was, "I will never allow any man to so defile my soul as to cause me to hate him."
You know, Michael, there are a lot of sayings out there about what real men do. It sounds like real men are in charge of their own minds and lives and operate in love.
Yes, that's true. Let's go on to step five. It's designed to restore love to your mind and confirm that you've done it successfully. If hostility or fear remains active, you will not be able to see what you love about a person or situation. When you can see what you love, it is because the condition of love is in your mind. And when the condition of love is in your mind, then you can love what you see.
I choose to restore the condition of love to my mind. Let's see. I can have a loving thought about Amy. Amy reaches out to me often. Oh, and about myself. I'm becoming responsible.
Richard looked a little sad as he processed how he'd pushed his sister away. Several minutes passed before he spoke of the loss he was feeling and the deep love he touched into, a love for Amy he had long since lost to his ever-present childhood hostility. Take a breath, Richard. Let go of your thoughts and feelings of loss, and perhaps you'll no longer transfer those expectations onto your relationships with women. Now, in step six, you identify what you want, and it's important to make sure you use only words that reflect what you actually want.
You mean words like, "What I really want is not to be angry at Amy"? Is that an appropriate answer for step six?
What is it you want? You sound like you're really clear on what you don't want, but the more you don't want it, the more powerfully you'll create it in your world.
How so? I don't see what's wrong with what I said.
Well, Richard, it's not a matter of being wrong. Remember, there's an energy dynamic in focusing, and it is a creative act. Your words reflect what you are creating. What you focus on, you create. Focus on what you don't want, and through avoidance, you automatically resonate or draw to your space what you're avoiding. It doesn't matter whether you focus on something out of love or out of hate. If you thought it, you got it. This is an issue we cover in depth in our workshop on creating consciously.
How would you suggest I word what I want, Michael?
Well, it sounds to me like perhaps you wanted to be appreciated as much as your sister and loved.
That's it. That's what I wanted.
Emotion welled up in Richard as he thought about the possibility of actually being loved and appreciated, as he said his sister had always been.
What I really want is to be loved, appreciated, and cared for as much as Amy.
Richard agreed that he could see the difference in the energy he was putting out with two different thoughts about what he wanted.
He was particularly impressed by the change in the way he felt as he switched back and forth from what he wanted to his avoidance thought. I don't want to be angry with Amy.
I'm amazed as I pay attention how each of these thoughts affects the way I feel. You said I would be more sensitive to my feelings if I refrained from smoking and drinking coffee. Could there be that much of a shift in awareness after leaving nicotine and caffeine alone for just a few hours?
I let him know that I thought it could make a difference, and it was probably a combination of factors, including the fact that he'd processed through a lot of emotion and cleared lots of baggage out of his mind during our one-day mini-intensive. Step 7 is an acknowledgement of personal responsibility. It's the step of growing out of the long-held childhood fantasies and taking responsibility for the output of your own mind. Only you cause you to feel, and feelings inform you of the quality of mind energy in which you are engaging. Every thought reflects a current or ancient choice. Therefore, every feeling is a result of those choices.
I'm not upset at this person, place, thing, or event, but by the reality inside of me. If I'm in pain, I'm in error.
Now, as we go on to step 8, it offers the opportunity, Richard, to distinguish between responsibility and the mind's cheap copy, blame. It's time to decide what your source is, blame or love. Time to look at what really causes your pain and recognize that every reality output from your mind follows a pattern.
Been there, done that, and I've got the t-shirt. Blame hasn't worked for me. I'm ready to go to another route. I'm ready to use forgiveness to change every pattern. I take responsibility, not blame, for all of my realities. Every reality in my mind is changeable. I now choose to connect with love instead of my upset.
Good breath, Richard. And step 9 is the core of the forgiveness process. Write your answer, what you wanted from step 6, in this blank. Recall in Aramaic, the word forgive means to cancel. Can you cancel the people in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Can you cancel your life?
No.
Can you cancel today?
No.
You can always cancel what you want out of a situation. Doing this sets your mind up to process through the unconsciousness around the issue at hand and experience a different reality.
Then I cancel. I let go of my need to be loved and appreciated and cared for as much as my sister.
Richard balked just a little at doing this.
Why would I cancel what I want? That seems ridiculous, Michael. I deserve to have what I want. You said so yourself.
Well, canceling your need for what you want opens the space for you to see your own blocks. You deserve to have what you ask for, and I acknowledge you as a powerful creator. Why haven't you created what you want?
Well, I don't know. No one has ever cared for me and appreciated me the way I wanted to be. That has always been the problem in my relationships with women. They're affectionate for a while, and then they become distant. I'm not sure I quite understand it yet, but I cancel my need to be loved, appreciated, and cared for as much as my sister.
Is it possible, Richard, you acquired that belief when you were a child? Did your behaviors with women drive them away, and is that what caused intimacy to disappear? The result you produce is that you get to prove over and over again that you're not lovable. Tears were flowing from Richard's eyes as, once again, feelings welled up from deep inside of him. A quiet sob filled the room as he spoke.
Why am I not lovable? What's wrong with me? It feels like I've never known what it is to feel loved. So I've become calloused in order not to feel the pain. It seems so deep, like a dark hole that can't ever be filled. I can see now why I tend to be intellectualized. It's been a way of avoiding the feeling like this.
Take a deep breath and keep breathing, Richard. You're accessing hidden places in yourself, places that your personality structure helps you to keep out of awareness. It's safe to access those places and move what's locked within. Notice where you were holding your hands as you went through that. Okay. That spot in you, the place in your body where the energy needs to move. Remember to hold the space of love. That's where healing happens. In step 9B, you get the chance to ask for assistance in moving through whatever comes to the surface as you forgive.
What do you mean?
Well, there is a power in the Aramaic language that's called Ruka Dekudsha. It's defined as an elemental force in the human mind that assists in letting go of errors and teaches the truth. It literally means the force that breaks off the effect of error in us, the force for that which is proper for us as humans. This inner power has been known by many names, the higher power, the Holy Spirit, the superconscious, the superprocessor. That is why there's a blank where I encourage you to address that power with whatever name is comfortable for you. How about going ahead and asking now for assistance?
Okay. I invite Ruka to incline me toward healing. Restore my love. Restore me to love. Assist me in keeping love present and help in letting go of my painful reality.
What's happening, Richard? Are you breathing?
I'm feeling really sad, overwhelmed with sadness and loss. At the same time, it's a good sadness, if such a thing's possible. It almost feels like being washed. There's an energy running through my hands, and my face feels a little numb. I'm realizing that when I was a kid, my parents changed when Amy was born. I blamed my sister for that change and how I was treated by my parents. It seems like I've really been unfair to her. I've taken it out on her all my life. And she was just a beautiful little kid. She didn't deserve what I've done to her and what I've continued to do to her, even as an adult. I've treated her like she was a nobody. The same thing I accuse my parents and women of doing to me all my life.
Well, it sounds like you could easily turn the abuse you've done to her on yourself. I'd suggest you be aware of that and live the commitment of being loving, gentle, and respectful with yourself.
It doesn't feel like I deserve it. Why, I hate myself for this. I've been pretty rotten to her.
Richard was in self-pity. You've just uncovered your next few worksheets, Richard. I suggest you make a note for your journal or fill in step 1A on some blank worksheets. You would benefit from worksheets on deserving, on self-hate, on being rotten. I think self-pity would also be a productive topic on which you could do worksheets. I invite you to remember that the purpose of delving into these areas of your life is to recognize what you've done to yourself and others with your mind energy. One of the games the human mind plays is to always reproduce its patterns and make those patterns look like justifiable action. What I hear is that your reality, someone is to blame and punishment is in order, has been resonated. And now that you see your sister's innocence, you're about to turn that reality on yourself. Remember, Richard, you are innocent too. I suggest you speak the first-person commitment in the mirror to yourself and recognize you deserve to be treated lovingly, gently, and with respect.
All right. I promise to trust myself enough to be willing to hear and speak the truth and treat myself lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, words, and actions all the time. In every situation, in every interaction, I will look for and acknowledge the highest and best in myself as I surrender to love, my true nature. Staying connected to my source, love, and nurturing that relationship is important to me, more important than any issue. If anything unlike love comes up, I will go to that quiet place within where love dwells. I'll listen to, welcome, and accept love's guidance. I'll be teachable as I ask to be inclined toward healing and show how to keep communication open in all my relationships. I'm willing to speak, experience, and be responsible for my own realities and learn and keep love conscious, alive and present as I heal and celebrate life.
It's powerful. I suggest you do that often. In the Aramaic scriptures, the mind was called, remember, the great deceiver. It could take any situation and justify projecting its old realities, patterns, and habitual behaviors into whatever happens. The task at hand is to bring love into your mind and heal your tendency to abuse yourself or anyone else, whatever comes up. Do you see how the mind sets its trap?
Yeah.
It's urgent, particularly when healing, to have a law by which you live. Commit in advance to following that law, especially if the mind advises you to go contrary to it. The commitment becomes a guidepost for decisions and behavior. It keeps you on track and away from falling into the trap of the mind. The law to use is that of love. You can't listen to the advice of an insane mind and change your behavior or make healing decisions.
I'm not insane right now. I'm just angry at myself.
Recall, Richard, an insane mind is a mind without love. The first law is keep the condition of love in your mind, whomever you think about, whatever happens, including yourself.
Okay.
Your focus is on you right now, and you are ready to punish yourself for the error of a child who was in pain. You didn't understand what was happening when a new baby came into your home. How could you? I would suggest you go back to step 8 and reconnect your mind to love before you take any other actions. Remember, the law of love applies to you too.
Okay. I really want to get through with this. It seems like such a waste the way I've been with my sister for so many years.
Great catch. Notice your words. It sounds like another good worksheet topic, wasted relationships. It would be a good idea to make a note of that on your future worksheet list. Have wasted relationships shown up anywhere else in your life?
Let me take just a minute and get centered in that love connection, Michael.
We sat silently for a moment, and Richard's countenance changed. He seemed to settle a little, and then he spoke.
It feels as though every relationship I've ever had was a waste, and I can see that I made the decision very early that relationships weren't safe. The truth is, I think, that I wasn't safe. I've been so angry ever since I was a child. I'd snap at anybody, for it appeared to be no reason. I now see clearly that I was hurting and wasn't going to let anyone get close enough to do that to me again. I can now see that all my adult trauma and pain has come out of my unwillingness to look honestly at my life, my own blockage of truth. My life drama is to be emotionally aloof and unavailable, just as described in the Celestine prophecy. It is clear that my attitude guaranteed I would be hurt over and over. The old saying, "There are none so blind as those that will not see," keeps coming to my mind. I've sabotaged my whole life.
Keep your breath open, Richard. You still have lots of life left. Let's tie what just came to the surface back to some of our earlier discussions. Keep breathing as we do this. Recall you said the women in your life were warm and loving at first, and then they became distant. You found you couldn't seem to get close to them again. I realize your thought made it look like it was all them, but was that your projection and externalization? Notice your thoughts earlier were that they became distant. It sounds like it was you who becomes distant and blames it on them.
I can't believe what I've been doing. And I've beat everyone else up
for what I've been doing to them all my life. I don't know if I can handle this.
Fortunately, breathe and the breath can handle it, Richard. There is nothing to handle. True forgiveness is not something you do. You simply open the door. And if you allow it to remain open, love does the rest. Just breathe and the energy will move. Remember, healing happens. Several moments passed as Richard went through waves of emotion.
What do I do with all these feelings?
Just be with them, Richard. It's safe to feel everything inside of you. Your job is to open the door and hold the space. Think of our earlier definition of processing. It is the capacity to hold love conscious, active, and present when anything less than love surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
By choosing to love truth, you've gotten in touch with some of the issues that your mind hides. You opened the space for that to happen when you canceled or forgave your need for what you wanted. This processing is the result of true forgiveness. By canceling, you allowed the file in your mind that kept issues hidden from your awareness to open. When these issues surfaced and were exposed to love, the truth became available to you and you began to let go, to heal these long-held painful realities. This is how healing looks. You will no longer have to carry these burdens. Your life will definitely change as a result of the process you just went through. I stress as strongly as I can that this is the effect of canceling your need for what you want, which is the key to opening the whole healing process.
Where did that come from? I didn't expect such a powerful upheaval. Do I feel relieved? I'm going to think about this for a long, long time. I don't know what to say. I'm a little embarrassed.
Huh? Sounds like another worksheet, Richard. I support you in letting go of embarrassment. That's just another reality in your mind. What you just went through is right on target. It's what our culture inhibits us from doing, especially as men, looking at, feeling, and dealing with the insanity we go through in life. Our culture has warned us not to open Pandora's box, but they did not tell us that if we never looked into and cleaned out Pandora's box, our lives would become like its contents. Can you see how the theme of what you've just uncovered has run through your whole life?
It has not run through my life, Michael. It has run my life. That experience and the decisions I made to protect myself from getting hurt again have been at the root of every relationship interaction I've ever had. I'm ready to recreate my life differently. It is safe to love, and I'm going to do it. Nothing can stop me now.
Well, Richard, I suggest you take a look at those words, nothing can stop me now. Recall the discussion about creating out of avoidance. Your words say you may be getting ready to set up something to stop you.
Now, don't be so literal. That's not what I meant.
I know that's not what you believe, but your words reflect avoidance, and your words always precede your creations. At this moment, it maybe sounds like I'm being a little picky, but I'm reflecting back to you where your reality structure is taking you. Your words are the indicator. Words reflect the energies with which we organize our bodies and our world. You've just had a powerful opening and insight, but there's still work to be done. Might I suggest you rephrase your intention to something such as, it's safe to love and I'm going to do it. Everyone, including myself, supports me in having loving, connected relationships, especially with women, and particularly with my sister.
Mm.
In the Aramaic, you've just been born into a new kingdom, a new level of insight.
Oh.
It is exciting, but you have a whole genetic and life history that's going in another direction. Your mind has a store of realities that is inertia-bound. Your reality structure will tend to keep going in its direction rather than this new way as soon as it's back in the driver's seat. Your words, nothing can stop me now, indicate the great deceiver is sneaking back already.
I'm ready to move on. I like this new way of thinking and being, and I don't want to go back to that old way. I can hardly wait to tell everyone I meet about what I found.
Well, be aware, Richard, that not everyone is going to want to hear what you have to say. Kind of recall when you first called me and you thought it'd be a waste of time to get together. Remember the don't storm the gates warning? Just be aware that you have work to do and the forgiveness process has just begun. There may be several layers of this and other old realities based on the childhood experience you just uncovered that will still come forward for healing. Those old realities will attempt to convince you that they are true, but only because that is what you've trained them to do.
I'm committed. What do I do?
Well, first, I suggest a commitment of 5 written worksheets a day for the next 40 days.
My.
As you've just observed, the worksheets put you in touch with your unconscious dynamics. They initiate healing. In the scriptures, the unconscious is called the desert or the heart. 40 days in the desert is very powerful. Recall in the scriptures they said, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Notice how the unconscious dynamics just uncovered have a way of sneaking in and setting up realities in your mind which result in the issues in your life.
It's pretty clear to me right now, but doesn't this put an end to it? I mean, we already did a worksheet on this issue. Shouldn't it be over?
Well, it is possible, Richard, but it's not usually quite that easy. The master teacher of the forgiveness process suggested 77 times 70 worksheets to clear up a given issue. In the scriptures, 7 is the number of completion, and a 0 added to that number is infinity. This means that you may do an infinite number of worksheets until you're complete with an issue. The real work begins now. Transforming old dynamics in the mind is a process that takes time. Recall, there are years of old experiences and generations of beliefs and insane interactions to overcome, eons of what was called wandering in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
This work is the core of the scriptural teaching that was veiled and available only to those who had the eyes to see and the ears to hear, only to those who had the brain cells.
But I didn't know what I was getting myself into, Michael. Oh, but I'm glad I came. I'll do my work, and I'll teach it to others.
Great. Once you realize what's there to be done? What else is there to do? Let's go on and cover the last step of the reality management sheet, and we can close for now.
I want to be at the support team super intensive next summer at Heartland. I'm ready to deepen my process even more. How do I arrange that?
Well, let's talk about that a little later and look at step 10, which you've already done, and then complete step 11.
I now feel cleansed and relieved, and I can see that neither of us deserved my hostility, and that I have work to do.
Great. Notice in step 10, you're asked to describe the same reality as you described in step 1. I invite you to notice how that reality has changed, and that you moved from the outer blame dynamic to the inner reality about yourself. That is the result of forgiveness.
It feels like I could write a novel on the insights that are coming from the few hours of work we have done. And this one worksheet, I hardly believe anything so powerful could have happened to me.
Writing a book on your work today is a great idea, Richard. I might just do that. I remind you that what you've done is a process, and there are highs and lows. When lows come, remember the thought, this too shall pass, and it will, though it can take up to 3 days if you do your work. I would suggest you put your insights, everything you're thinking, into a journal, and keep rereading it. It will be fertile ground for future process and worksheet topics. In the final step of the reality management sheet, you purposely look for the love in the subject of your sheet and focus on what you want to create with them. Be clear that your focus is on exactly what you want from the situation.
Okay. I am grateful and join with the love in you, Amy. I acknowledge us for creating truth, perfect love, and a close, warm relationship. I'll be available and responsible for my feelings. Relief and hope are what I feel now. It seems I've learned so much about myself, more than I've learned in my whole lifetime. What can I do for you, Michael?
Well, Richard, there's a principle in physics called critical mass. the threshold point where a seemingly small action transforms a large mass. Without charge to the sponsor, we accept every invitation possible to speak to groups. We present our travel workshops free and invite people to copy and give away our materials so our work's available without regard to the ability to pay. We do these things as our contribution to creating the critical mass with these tools. Doing your work and sharing it with others will add energy to our family's commitment to deliver these tools to every mind on the planet, and it's the greatest gift you could give to us. Of course, we also invite you to support this work financially or in any other way you can. There's always work to be done at Heartland, and with 10 buildings, another one just growing, the donation of materials and labor is always welcome. Of course, doing and passing the work on is most important. I believe that a precious opportunity was missed 2,000 years ago to heal a suffering, wounded humanity. It was our chance to regain our sanity, our dignity, and to function again as human beings. Recalling that love of truth is the healer of blockage of truth, I trust its transforming power. I believe that each mind wants to and will shift to the most rewarding way of living possible once the possible is seen. The question is, who will break through to the critical mass? Who will make the possible available to humanity? To me, the following story by an unknown author says it all. It's entitled, "Will You Make the Difference?" "Tell me the weight of a snowflake," a hawk asked a wild dove. "Nothing more than nothing," was the answer. "In that case, I must tell you a marvelous story," said the hawk. "I sat on the branch of a fir, close to its trunk. It began to snow. Not heavily, not a raging blizzard. No, just like in a dream, without any violence. Since I had nothing better to do, I counted the snowflakes settling on the twigs and needles of my branch. The number was exactly 3,741,952 when the next snowflake dropped onto the branch. Nothing more than nothing, as you say. And the branch broke off." Having said that, the hawk flew away. The dove, since Noah's time an authority on peace, thought about the story for a while and finally said with resolve, "Perhaps only one person's voice is lacking for peace to come about in the world.
I'm willing to be that voice."
The next time someone resonates a reality less than love in your mind, will yours be the voice for peace?
So welcome to Mind Shifters Radio, and this is Michael, and we're live. We're complete with the recording. Actually, Jeannie and I are on the road. We actually just stopped in O'Fallon, Illinois for me to get a haircut. We're on our way to pick up our granddaughter. And so here we are. And our call-in number, if you have a thought or a question for us, is 563-999-3581. Would love to hear how the reading of the book has impacted you, and or if you've been working with the tools, been working with the worksheets. Let us know what that means, what that's doing for you. And beyond that, if you're on one of those stations we can't hear you, or pardon me, we can't see you on our control panel, if you call that number 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show live. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will be able to turn on your microphone. So delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. And, of course, the whole objective of this work, as that last little story speaks of, is to bring every voice to become a voice of peace. There's actually someone who had posted a post this morning that I observed. And this person was saying that they were, that there's a, the month of October is, let's see, what did they call it? Sober October. And this person had written an article saying they were going to stop forcing themselves to drink because everybody else wanted them to drink. Someone, I think they said they were 28. So they go to parties, you know, if you're not drinking, everybody thinks there's something wrong with you, or, you know, what are you doing? And so they decided to move into sobriety, period, just because it made sense to them. And it was an interesting story, and I posted it, and I posted along with the article that I usually post once or twice a year around the holidays. And it's a little story about, if you go to my Facebook page, if you're not connected with me on Facebook, go to JM_RYCE, Jeannie and Michael _RYCE. And you'll see that story, and it's basically a story I created about the alien who comes from the moon and is introduced for the first time to these creatures called humans. And he is invited to someone's house, and he's kind of surprised, cabinet in their homes, where they keep a fluid that they serve only to their favorite people, their relatives and best friends. And, of course, that fluid's called alcohol. And then the alien goes through the number of highway traffic accidents, the number of family breakups, the number of children abused, the number of spouses murdered, the number of suicides, the number of automobile accidents, the number killed globally, which is over 3 million a year on planet Earth due to alcohol, the health effects of alcohol. Just goes through it, and, you know, as an alien is saying, you know, gee, what's going on with this species? What are we doing here? And so I posted this story today, and when I was doing a little more research, I continuously edit. We're on that side. I continuously, you know, on an ongoing basis, every time I post that story, I edit it a little bit and ran across. I didn't realize that the DSM-5, which is basically the manual for psychiatrists on diagnosing people and such, that alcoholism was actually a mental disorder, legally classified as a mental disorder. And they tie it in with genetics. And, you know, one of the things that this particular article spoke about was the fact that there's a 5% of women have the gene that relates to, I don't remember which one it was, but a particular type of female cancer, and that they regularly do testing and surgeries to avoid that, you know, to take body parts off just as a prophylactic action at the 5% rate of genes. And there's a gene associated with alcohol or alcoholism, and the rate there is 50%. And yet, you know, it's a socially acceptable lubricant, and hey, everybody's doing it, so why not? And as I was writing that, I actually wrote to the person who wrote the original article, thanking them for their information, because they've done a really nice job putting it together. I put it into my article and acknowledged them for it. But one of the things that one of the pieces of research that I did was speaking to someone who'd been in recovery and was, you know, talking about some of the things that aren't in the culture to support people with this genetic predisposition and with alcoholism. And the invitation was, get mad about it. Twice this person is, get mad. And so I actually copied the article because it was some really good information. But I changed the words get mad to take action and do something about it. And I wrote to them and said I had made that change in what I posted of the article that I thanked them for. And then I invited them to consider that mad, anger, hostility is just another drug. It's another addiction. Most people can't control their anger because they, just like alcohol, are addicted to it. I believe it should be in the DSM-5 manual as a mental disorder. Hostility is a mental disorder. It destroys the proper functioning of the human mind. And so we could bring that into the conversation and recognize, and of course, there'll be a lot of people that will resist going into doing such a thing because, oh my God, that means that everybody in the culture's got a mental disorder. Well, if that's the way it is, then that's the way it is. But, you know, when you think about, you know, the 6'6" guy that weighs 290 pounds and he wails on his 3-year-old in a rage, or on a wife in a rage and breaks her nose again, isn't that a mental disorder? Isn't there something seriously, seriously out of harmony with that? The person who rages and screams at the ones they say, I love you? Isn't that a mental disorder? And yeah, pretty much everybody in the culture's got one. So time for treatment, time for people to step up to the plate and do something about cleaning up their own minds. And, of course, this first century Aramaic work of Yeshua is the most profound and most powerful way that I know of to do that cleansing process. And, of course, life is always goading us to do the cleansing we need to do. You know, you've heard me say before, probably with tongue in cheek, that the purpose of life is to kick us right square in the limitation, to show us what we're holding on to and what it is that we need to work through. And we perfectly attract as creators, and we perfectly set up every circumstance and every situation that we need in order to get our lives on track and get back to sanity in order to get rid of our mental disorders. So we'll attract the very people and the very circumstances, and it's hard to imagine until you really understand the physics of it how powerful we are with the energetic patterns that we hold to reach out into the world and energetically attract exactly the right people at exactly the right time to say exactly the right things and do or not do exactly the things that will show us what it is that we need to be about forgiving. And remembering that this word forgive does not mean I'm going to let you off the hook or, I know, but they're just about done. It's not, we're driving. So it's not, life is relentless in showing us what it is that we need to deal with, because we are able to send out these energetic signals that draw to us time and time and time and time again that which shows us the content of our own minds. Now, if we live in denial, as the book's talking about, when we deny ownership for what it is that's going on in our mind, then we have to hide or dissociate from the very content that we don't want to feel, the content that we don't want to deal with. And when we do that, we, by dissociating from it, we literally push in. When we push it down, we add energy to it, which literally strengthens the energy field with which that particular disorder in our minds reaches out into the world and says energetically, hey, somebody, I need to resonate you into my space to do what it is that I need to do to look at the next part of my mind that I'm projecting into my brain's image of you, that I'm constructing my perception of you about. And, of course, life guarantees to fulfill your wishes, and so somebody shows up. And you get to look at that part of your mind again and again and again until finally, you know, I'm saying this to me as much as anybody else, finally I get to go, oh, what my mind is outputting is coming from the content of my mind. This is my construct. I made this up. Remember the CIA research that we've spoken about where they did studies on human, they spent millions on a study of human intelligence. You can go to our website. The book is there. You can download it free. It's also on the CIA website, but Jeannie put it on the website because they kept changing its location on the CIA website. So we now have it on our website. You can download it and read it. But if you look at study and they're looking at human intelligence and you look at perception, here's what that study says about perception. The mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. That's a verbatim quote from CIA research. The mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. And each one of us makes up our own version of reality. And if we live in denial, if we think or speak as though anything outside of us is the cause of what's going on inside of us, then our minds have to follow that instruction set and show us that that something outside of us is the cause of what's going on inside of us. And that's what our mind constructs. And as long as we are living in denial, as long as we're saying, in essence, to our minds, don't show me that. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to look at that. I don't want anything to do with that. Then our mind will have to say, okay, well, I'll hide it from you, and I'll make up a different story. I'll make up an excuse for why you're feeling what you're feeling, why you're seeing what you're seeing, why you're experiencing what you're experiencing. And so you get to live in a lie. This work is the invitation to give up the lies, to give up the mental disorder of hostility. And we could probably put fear in the category too. And when we remove those energetic patterns, we get to get back to a mind whose perceptual constructs are literally fueled by love rather than hostility and fear. And in essence, that's where we want to go with this work. We want to move into the realm where we create a community of people that actually function as human beings, that is, actually function out of love. And in functioning out of love, see only accurate perceptions that are fueled by the active presence of love. And when we get to live in that world, we get to see who we are as human beings. We get to experience what everybody else is. And in that shift is the most monumental gift that we could ever be given. And we get as many opportunities as we need. As often as you want to live in, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, that upset me, oh, that caused me so much pain, oh, when they did that, it hurt so much. Those are all words of denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I am in denial, and I dissociate from the content of my own mind. That is a mental disorder. And the whole culture is doing it. And it's become the norm, so everybody goes, no, no, that's not a mental disorder. That's just the way it works. Well, based on the teachings of Yeshua from 2,000 years ago, who had this awesome tool of forgiveness, and working in with his specific tools for the last 40 years and a little better than 50 overall, can me that long to see through the errant perceptual constructs of my own mind and of the minds that trained me and the minds around me and the authorities that we all look at and say, well, that's the authority. They must know what has to happen. And as we wake up to the truth of who we are as human beings, we get to live in a different world. Literally, the world between our ears changes. And we get to see who we are as human beings. So that's our objective with this work, and we're glad you're here to be part of the conversation. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? And James checking here to see what we've got going on.
No hands up.
No hands up. So if you're out there in listener land, call a number again, 563-999-3581. You dial that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. If you push 1, we will be having a conversation. And I would love to have a conversation with you. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What's going on in your world? What's happening with your worksheet process? How is that unfolding for you? Now, when we look at this work, we're really looking at synthesizing so many different disciplines in order to enlarge our ability to see what's going on. So we're tying in these ancient Aramaic healing tools with energy systems and quantum theory, the latest in natural non-invasive health and technology, naturopathic medical principles, spiritual psychology, theology. We're also bringing in the autonomic nervous system, the brain, mind, body research. We're looking at as holistic an overview as we can possibly come up with. Now, in the modern world, in the thinking of the modern world, one would think that these are conflicting disciplines, and therefore they cannot be synthesized or tied together because they conflict with each other. But as you look through a larger lens, what we'll find is anything that works has to fit within the system of truth. Now, our explanations may be feeble, may be weak. Why doesn't it work? Well, you know, if you recognize, let's just take this one atrocity that's been done to us as human beings down through the ages and that most of us have bought into. You know, the fact is we are creators. And as creators, having had that fact hidden from us, we give away our creative power to creating a life where it looks like we're not creators. That's what happens when we buy a lie. So the number one thing you want to really cherish and honor is truth, because it's only when you do that that your mind can start to show you the truth and you can truly take hold of the creative power you were designed to have. You know, there are all kinds of aberrant philosophies, all kinds of strange views that to the people engaging them seem to be accurate because they work. But they don't work because the belief behind them is true. They work because the individuals engaged are creators. And when you recognize yourself as a creator and you start to enlarge your view of the world, you start to see that all of these disciplines I just mentioned tie together into one basic understanding of life. And when you realize the power that you've got in that regard, as a true human being, the ability to affect change within yourself, within your family system, both ancestors and descendants, and bring about change in the world, it's pretty awesome. And sooner or later, if you want, you know, a true solution to whatever the challenges are in your life, especially if your mind tells you the challenges are out there, you've got to invest yourself in a learning, relearning, an unlearning, relearning experience, really. And oftentimes that unlearning takes more time than learning something totally and completely new. So hang with us. Build the brain cells for the picture that we're working on developing. And as you do, you'll find that these tools, if you become a student of your own mind, an observer, and learn to properly interpret, you know, distress and alarm signals within your mind, within your own nervous system, everything starts to change. Because of misunderstood mental interpretations, an alarm goes off in the body that is causing trauma in the body, and the aberrant emotional training turns that alarm into rage, and the picture in our mind has us looking at what we think is something out there, an hallucination, a literal picture where we falsely take the energetic patterns from those around us and make them into reflections of our own internal alarm states. The alarm is designed to warn us that there's something inside of us. Our nervous system is going into high alert because there's an energy inside of us that needs to be faced, that needs to be dealt with, that needs to be healed. But the emotional nature, because it's been trained that, oh, this means somebody out there did it to you, we totally and completely misinterpret. So these misunderstood mental interpretations, when there's a call, when your physiology goes into alarm stage and says, I need some internal healing, that has to be properly interpreted in order to not play the game of everything that's going on in your physiology is everybody else's life, or pardon me, everybody else's fault, and that your life is disturbed by others rather than the content of your own mind. So this is a set of skills that, you know, in the world, the average mind has never heard of, let alone been practiced or trained in. So hopefully, you know, everybody who's listening will expand their horizons and move deeper and deeper into the realm of self-care, of self-healing, and literally how to make your unconscious mind, your biology, your nervous system, literally life-friendly. And so, in essence, that's where we're heading with this work, and our desire is to provide the tools to do that to every mind, heart, being on the planet so we can all return to human life. And if you have any question about what human life is, get a hold of it while it's still fresh. Hold a newborn. You know, that's one of the things that Jeannie and I are just getting ready to do. You know, this afternoon we'll be hugging and holding our granddaughter that's two, and tomorrow afternoon we'll be with Kaylee Joe, who has just been out of the wrapper for about 5 weeks. So we're going to get pretty close to that source. But when you hold that newborn that has not yet had the insanity of our human cultures brainwashed into them, and you tap into the essence of that newborn, you will define that newborn essence as love. We come into the world as that powerful presence of love, and then life begins to unleash its rage, its fear, its guilt, its pain, its drama, and its trauma, and its explanations about how it's everybody else's fault. You know, the newborn, as they grow into language and such, if they live in a home system that is based in hostility or fear, the newborn will learn very quickly that they are the problem in the household. And, of course, once they learn that they're the problem, once the power person in their lives reinforces twice, 10 times, 100, 1,000, 10,000 times over a period of years that you're the problem, then you'll tend to take on that power person behavior, and you'll do your best to guarantee that everybody else is the problem and that you're the innocent victim and you're the one who's always right and they are always wrong. But you'll notice that in that state where you've got this perceptual construct that somebody else is the one that's wrong, your body is in full alarm. Your nervous system is going nuts. And you believe it's about somebody other than your own nervous system and your own body, mind you. So what we're looking to do is to bring those tools together so that literally human life can return to Earth. That is, a newborn, the essence of active present love, can come into a body-mind unit in this world and be supported in experiencing only that as the training that life gives them. And so that's the direction we're heading with this work. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. And I'll check once more with Miss Jeannie to just see if we have to have anybody with a hand up. No, well, we're just in listening mode today. Okay. And we've got 7 minutes, so if you've got a question, we could do it now before I head on into the next round of thoughts. And when I do, we'll probably close down the switchboard so there won't be any more questions. Oh, yes. One of the things that I'm working on, and Jeannie was just reminding me, we're doing an article that I've been working on. I'm turning into a course on self-healing. And we're going to be sending that out hopefully within the next 24 hours to our mailing list. So if you want a copy, it's going to integrate all that we're talking about here. If you want a copy of that, then please go to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. At the bottom of the page, you'll see a heart, and there's a sign up for our newsletter. And when our newsletter goes out, if you're on it, you'll get a copy of it. And it's kind of a medium-length course. We're going to integrate a lot of different information, several different links to different aspects, different videos and audios that just verify for you along the way how this human state of functioning as love has been undone so that we come to the point where we think human life is this hostility and fear-based self. If you remember, if you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he was working on the same project. What he said is, in order for you to live, you've got to die. In order for your newborn essence to come back and be fully functional through your body-mind unit, you're going to have to get rid of, you're going to have to undo the training of the culture that was based in blame, you know, the one-world religion of blame and victimhood. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some learning. So this course is going to be about unlearning the lies and relearning how to integrate the truth of who we are to literally actually function as the pure presence of love. That's our objective. That's what we're here to do. So in traumatized family and community systems, the controlling dynamics of people's nervous systems are basically unrecognized and or they're just ignored. And once you start to put all of these pieces together and you're willing to honor truth, if you've got patience and the courage to challenge your false beliefs, then a whole new world of possibilities opens. That possibility is that literally every cell within our physiology could be functioning and fueled by active present love. And when we do function as that active present love, then deeper and deeper opportunities come to undo the corrupt data of the past, the hostility and fear, the mental illnesses of the culture. You know, when you look at, you go back to the Aboriginal villages, you look at how bizarre, actually there's a really interesting film about the Aboriginals. What's the name of that film, Jeannie, on the Aborigines, the bottle, the Coke bottle?
Gods Must Be Crazy.
You want to see an awesome film if you haven't seen it. And it's basically a group of Aboriginals in Australia who have never seen anything modern in any way, shape, or form. And they live as gentle, sweet creatures with each other, like virtually conflict-free. And one day, an airplane goes by, and you know they hear this sound from the sky, and this object falls on the earth. And they think the gods have sent them something, and it's a soda bottle. Unlike anything they've ever seen, it's hard, it's smooth, and all of a sudden, one of them has something that nobody else has. And it's so useful because there are all these things you can do with it that you can't do otherwise. You know, you can prepare skins with them, the smooth surface for smoothing out skins. You know, they find all kinds of uses. And all of a sudden, it shows how they have the goal, everybody has a goal, of being the one who possesses this magic bottle from the gods. And all of a sudden you see all this conflict develop, fighting, hitting each other. And so the one little Aboriginal guy decides that it is his job to take it to the edge of the earth and throw it off, give it back to the gods. And all of the challenges that he goes through as he interacts with and conflicts with society. You know, it's interesting. Mahatma Gandhi was asked, what did he think of Western civilization? And he said he thought it would be a really great idea. And so this Aboriginal has his interaction with civilization, so-called civilization. And, of course, the outcome is somewhat sad and somewhat hilarious, but it has some powerful lessons in it in recognizing who we are designed to be as human beings. So if you haven't seen the film yet, The Gods Must Be Crazy,
You'll find it quite interesting. And beyond that, Miss Jeannie, how's our time doing?
We're out.
Oh, well, we're complete. I'm on the guest line. So when I'm on my regular call-in line, I get a warning in the back when we're at 60 seconds, 30 seconds. So we're complete. So I'm just going to say thank you for joining us. Hope we'll talk to you tomorrow. Blessings. Bye-bye.